I just got freed and I still have a case going on. I'm on the list now and I don't know what's going to happen, so it was also quite risky. All my steps was really cautious steps. I didn't have a really long-term plan at that time. It was just my plan was just to get out of Egypt safely and then think what is next.
Youssef must now leave his Egyptian homeland quickly, with only a week or so to get ready. His travel options are limited as he doesn't have time to get a visa. He realizes the nearest country he can enter fairly easily is Sudan. He books his flight a few days before he travels, leaving only a little bit of time to say goodbye to family and friends.
I started with my friends. Usually we meet up at a cafe playing board games and just hanging out. I spent quite good time with them, talking, laughing, and drinking some local drinks. And yeah, I was looking to everyone as it is probably the last time I'm going to see them. I didn't really know if it is the last time or not, because I was hoping that this situation is not going to last for a really long time and I will be able to go back to Egypt soon. And then I just give them a goodbye hug, but I didn't tell anyone. And yeah, some of them, when I just give them that goodbye hug, we are seeing each other again, right?
So you had to sit there with your friends, yeah, knowing that it was the last time you were going to see them, and you couldn't even tell them that you were leaving.
No, I couldn't. I don't like these goodbye moments.
He's terrified that rumors of his departure will circulate, and he tries to be so cautious in the days leading up to his flight. Barely anyone knows he's going to travel, outside of his parents and one close friend from university who has some connections at the airport and tries to help Youssef escape the country.
And he just told me that you just make sure to book your ticket on this day, a specific day. It should be easier in this day than the other days. I didn't know actually what that meant, but years later I knew about some people who had almost similar situation as mine. So he got arrested actually again from the airport.
When the day arrives for Youssef to leave the country, he and his parents rent a car to make the two-hour trip to the airport.
The ride to the airport, we were just talking, me and my parents, all the time about some memories and also about what I'm going to do there. I was looking at everything, at every place with memories, to just have this kind of the last look. And then when we reached the airport, I couldn't stay there for a really long time, because it was going to be harder, and if I stayed longer at that time, I decided to go alone to the airport. So I said goodbye to my parents and hugged them. My mother was actually kind of crying. I said goodbye, I hugged them, and I got into the airport.
So here he is, 21 years old and traveling for the first time since he was 6, going to a country he's never seen before. Youssef explains he could barely focus on how he was feeling because he's so concerned about what could happen to him at the airport and the huge risk he's taking. He said there was a big probability that he'd be arrested again before he made it on the airplane.
Just entering the airport and imagining that every officer there is just maybe suspecting me or looking for me, something like that.
Usually they have lists in the airports for people who were for example, arrested before or something.
With my small bag, I checked in and I went to the passport control. Took a really deep breath and tried to just appear as a normal person who is traveling. The officer there have to make a telephone. I didn't know what is he's doing. But then he just stamped my passport and said goodbye.
Youssef and I are both left wondering what that telephone call was about. Was it unrelated? Or was the agent calling to find out if Youssef is allowed to leave the country? With a little bit of time before the flight and still trying to stay calm and collected, Youssef gets a coffee before boarding and makes a mistake. He leaves his bag sitting on a chair.
Suddenly, there was some officer and security guards was coming really fast, like almost running. They were rushing towards the cafe where I was ordering my coffee there. And suddenly, they stopped at my bag. I was really shaking from inside. And I thought that this is the moment they are going to arrest me again. And then they started to ask everyone, whose bag is this? So I was really terrified and I didn't know how to answer yes or no. I just nodded with my head. And then one of them just said, you are not allowed to leave your bag here. That was really relieving that they are not coming for me this time.
Full disclosure, I broke out in a cold sweat just listening to Youssef tell this story. I gather myself and ask him what it was like when he got on board the plane bound for Khartoum, Sudan.
When the plane took off, I was just thinking why it had to be like that. But also I felt at the same time as I'm standing on no ground, there is no ground under my feet. And start all over again in another country. I don't really know if I'm going to stay in it for a long time or not. So yeah, I had just to reach there to feel safe and then to think about my plan.
He says waking up that first morning in Sudan was like being in an imaginary world.
Sudan is a very different country from Egypt. Even like the first moments when the plane landed, the whole weather was like kind of dusty or something like that. Yeah, it just felt like I'm entering a new era, a new stage in a movie or something. You just spend the first 3 days or 1 week just thinking, okay, now what? I need to complete my studies, I need to work, I need to establish life outside the country.
He finds a place to live in Sudan and gets work at a travel agency, an industry he'd never worked in before. He tells me he takes comfort in the bond between the Egyptian and Sudanese people, and that the Sudanese have a special way to refer to Egyptians.
They call them Ibn al-Nil. It means the son of the Nile. Yeah, it expresses how close they are because like the Nile River have like 7 or 8 countries, but they only call the Egyptians with this word.
So it made you feel a little bit more at home there.
Yeah, and it means you are our brother in the Nile.
Despite the closeness between the two cultures, Youssef recognizes that it's not possible for him to complete his architectural studies in Sudan, which is in worse condition than Egypt when it comes to political unrest. After a long wait for paperwork from his Egyptian university, he applies to many schools around the world and is accepted at a university in Cyprus, where he spends 2 intense years completing his courses. He tells me it was a very active international community of people there, and he was excited to resume his study after being away for so long.
It felt really great to widen my thoughts at that time and to meet people. And also rethink again about everything, who I am and where I belong to.
His residence permit didn't allow him to stay in Cyprus beyond graduation. So once again, he's faced with the choice of where he can go next. With time ticking before his Egyptian passport would expire and with no option to renew it, Youssef journeys from Cyprus to Turkey to Georgia and South Africa, all on temporary residence permits. I ask him why he wasn't able to get longer-term residence in any of these places.
I think my answer would be it is because I was born in Egypt. This is how I see it now. Being born in some countries can be the only mistake that someone can make. I didn't meet the requirements in some countries. I tried actually to get a residence permit in a different country. I mean like a really long-term one. I don't know what to do after that because no one can live without a passport. We're just looking for some place that I can feel safe and I can feel myself. So I need a place where I can have a permanent residence and then I can have a citizenship.
And then did that lead you to the Netherlands?
Yeah,
because I cannot renew my Egyptian passport and I cannot go back to my homeland. The asylum at this time was a reasonable choice, right?
So you flew from South Africa to Schiphol Airport.
Yeah. And this is where I applied for asylum.
We'll be right back.
Okay, now from all the lands, from all the places on this planet, there's no room, no place to go to, you know? And this is probably my last chance, my last try. I don't know if it worked or not.
Youssef tells me about what happened to him when he requested asylum at the airport in Amsterdam.
I was coming from 12-hour flight, and we have to wait for 12 hours inside an office or a place where we apply for asylum. I enter the room that looks exactly like the room in the prison inside the court in Egypt. It's like a very small room with no windows or something, a metal door. Yeah, at this time it felt like intense for me, and it felt like, am I really in a safe place or not, you know? I don't know if this was because of my past experience or because of what it looks like.
Youssef stays at the airport holding facility for 10 or 11 days before being transferred to the main refugee center in the Netherlands, where he spends more than a year before getting an apartment of his own. He tells me that while he's been able to stay in close contact with his family during the 9 years he's been away, it's also been very challenging. His sister got married in Egypt earlier this year, and Youssef could only attend virtually.
Video calling them while being in the wedding or while doing the preparations for the wedding, I was calling my sister and her husband, trying to also get to know him. Also to see the rest of my big families.
Last summer, his family tried to come visit Youssef in person, but were stopped by Egyptian border agents and questioned as to why they were traveling. The agents took their passports, prevented his family from traveling, and sent them home.
I felt really very disappointed not to see my family. I really want to hug my mom. I want to see my sisters growing up, and I want to see my dad before it is too late. It could help just bringing me some good energy and charging again my heart battery and to feel alive again and to feel emotions and something just moving inside me.
While they're now trying to get new passports reissued, it doesn't seem like they'll be reunited in the near future.
We try to be just updated about each other's life. Yeah, it is what it is, and we have to just accept it and adapt to it.
When I ask Youssef what he misses most about home, he talks about the importance of feeling understood and included.
Like, you don't have to spend so much time to express what you want to say, for example. Or you don't have to spend so much effort to get a work or to get understood correctly, because cultural difference is quite huge. You want to be included in this community and you want to feel belonging. But sometimes you feel like it allows, sometimes it doesn't work. Am I the new identity, the new person who's just starting his life all over again in a new country? Or am I having deeply rooted relations to something else, you know? But deep inside, he's just craving to be connected to the people around him. We need just to look at each other from different perspective. Luckily, I'm living in a very good country now, safely, and was a really good future, I expect. I didn't actually expect at all to be an asylum seeker in any country, or to be in the Netherlands and live here. So far, it seems like it was a really good option and a good solution.
you never know unless you try. I'm really happy with being safe in the Netherlands and being able to be my true self and expressing it in a safe and open community and a country that respect the law.
That's all for this week. Thanks for joining us. We want to hear from you. If you know of someone who might like to be a guest on the show, we'd love to speak with them. If you know of an organization doing work to help refugees, we will promote them. Drop me a note. My email address is lee@startwithyourname.com. Also, if you're enjoying the podcast, please consider leaving us a review, which can really help to increase awareness of the podcast around the world. I look forward to hearing from you and hope you'll join us next week when we talk with William. The Start With Your Name podcast is hosted and produced by me. Our theme song is by Oleksandr Savochka, with additional music by Sergei Chetvertnik, Nate Loper, Rude, Francesco Biondi, and Alexei Chistilin. Special thanks to Sophie von den Enk and Youssef. See you soon.